Greetings, this is Jeff Roars, and you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast. I'm your host, Douglas Burdett, and my goal in this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's working in modern marketing to help grow your business. Don't worry about taking notes. I'm going to do that for you, and you can find them at marketingbookpodcast.com. Today, I'm joined by Jeff Roars, and we're going to talk about his book, Audience, Marketing in the Age of Subscribers, Fans, and Followers. Jeff Roars is Vice President of Marketing Insights for ExactTarget, a Salesforce.com company, and he also leads ExactTarget's content marketing research, social media, and thought leadership teams. Jeff also co-created and continues to produce the award-winning Subscribers, Fans, and Followers Research Series. And Jeff is the co-host, along with Jay Baer, of the very popular Social Pros podcast, which I listen to and recommend enthusiastically. Prior to joining ExactTarget, Jeff served as president of a digital marketing agency. He's also a recovering attorney, bacon lover, and diehard Cleveland Browns fan. Jeff, congratulations on your book, Audience. Congratulations on escaping the practice of law. And welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you very much. An honor to be here.
Are there any Cleveland Browns fans who are not diehard fans?
Well, I usually refer to myself as a diehard victim as opposed to a fan, which, again, this offseason, it's proving to be the case, as I think we may be one of, if not the first franchise to see our GM suspended and possibly lose a draft pick for the GM texting things down to the sidelines during the game. So we find new ways to basically embarrass ourselves on a regular basis, but the fans continue to root for the team because we're big fans of the region and the city. And boy, oh boy, after 50 years without a championship, even a lottery ticket would pay off at some point, right?
Well, there's always next year. And as I interviewed one of your fellow fans, Joe Polizzi, and he said, there's no fair weather Browns fans. I have a client who's a Browns fan, and I've actually got another interview coming up with another Browns fan from Cleveland, and they seem to crank out a lot of great marketing books. So,
well, we have good senses of humor. We can roll with the punches.
Humility.
We have a unique perspective on the world. Right. When you've rooted for futility for 50 years, that's what occurs. So that is the positive outcome.
That's great. Well, let me start out with one quote that was beginning of the book that I thought beautifully explained the importance of this audience concept. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the choice is yours because you, the consumer, determine whether or not to become part of any audience. You are not owned. Your attention, action, and loyalty have to be earned by all those who want it. That's how it works today. We like, follow, and subscribe to our favorite brands, companies, and people anytime we want. We usually do so when it brings us joy, saves us money, or provides us with timely information. As consumers, we are in control. We decide which audiences to join, leave, or ignore altogether. Unfortunately, not all businesses appreciate this dynamic. They operate under the false assumption that paid media still rules the roost and provides all of the audiences needed to fuel their business. That may have been the case at one point in time, but no longer. Tell us the story that led to this book.
Well, it is an interesting one. I have a kind of a long and circuitous kind of career path, starting when I was a disc jockey in high school, in college for commercial stations. And so I learned very early on from that experience and doing theater and moot court when I was in law school and all of these different activities about the power of audience, whether you are performing, whether you are, you know, trying to win an argument in front of a court, whether you are a marketer, you know, trying to get your brand out there. Audience seems to be this critically important through line in my own personal career. And so when I joined ExactTarget back in May of 2007, I was very quickly plugged into our marketing organization and a tour that we had planned, 13 cities in the span of 7 weeks and pulled that together with some great colleagues, including my partner in crime, Joel Book, and, you know, was out in front of audiences, you know, across the country and also up in Canada, again, reinforcing the importance of that personal connection with audience and what they mean. So over time at Exact Target, as we looked to help educate our teams, our clients, our partners as to the changing nature of relationships with consumers because of the explosive increase in the number of channels and devices, I co-created a research series called Subscribers, Fans, and Followers with my then colleague, Morgan Stewart, who is now CEO and co-founder of Trendline Interactive. And Morgan, myself, Katie Martin, who was working on the writing side, and then we had some great internal design help put together the first 7 in the Subscribers, Fans, and Followers series, which is still out there at exacttarget.com/SFF. And that series really exposed some of the growing myths in the age of social media about consumers, you know, abandoning email was one of the big myths, and, you know, moving all of their communications into the social channels. And that just simply wasn't the case. What was happening was this massive fragmentation of communication and therefore a massive fragmentation of audience. And so as that research series went on and we continued to explore channel preferences and the effect of mobility and the maturation of the different social channels, I knew there was a book in me. I knew I would look back in anger if I had not converted some of that knowledge into something more permanent. And so I was approached by Wiley a couple of years ago, and through the grace of then CMO Tim Kopp and then CEO Scott Dorsey's support, they gave me the green light to write that. And as I was working on the book, this would have been, gosh, April through July of 2013, a strange thing happened, and that was Exact Target was acquired by Salesforce. And it actually reinforced much of the message I was trying to communicate. So I was able to reflect on that and kind of incorporate some thoughts into the book. But, you know, really the journey that I've been on as a career, my colleague Joel Book, many of us as marketers, is, you know, chasing that promise of the one-to-one relationship. And what I realized, you know, as I explored that, and as also I talked with colleagues like Joe Polizzi, the founder of Content Marketing Institute, and as I spoke on more content marketing panels, was that, yes, we aspire to get to the one-to-one relationship, but before we can do that, we are now responsible for building our own audiences, our own direct audiences. And that responsibility was not getting the same kind of attention or emphasis that other growing parts of marketing were, such as, you know, content marketing, which is getting, you know, a heck of a lot of investment these days, or social media marketing, where the emphasis was more on the outcome than it was on the audience development. So, you know, that's, you know, kind of the long and circuitous route as to what motivated me. And then through a very intensive 4-month period, I wrote the book, called together some things that I've been speaking about for years. But a lot of it came from just the process of writing, and it broadened out from just being Subscribers, Fans, and Followers to being this broader audience concept, the idea of proprietary audiences that marketing is now responsible for building, maintaining, engaging, and increasing in terms of size, engagement, and value.
You know, it seems like if there is one part of a marketer's brain amongst many that needs to be rewired, it is this concept of building your own audience, because you are now responsible for your own audience. Whereas Don Draper, who we often refer to as sort of the old marketing model, I don't think he ever had to worry about building his own audience because he was just renting audiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I jokingly refer to in presentations and in the book, you know, that there's a reason why he could have so many, you know, quote unquote, extracurricular activities, affairs, and 3 martini lunches, is because he didn't do a whole heck of a lot. You know, he had a team that executed his creative vision, but he never had to worry about where the audience would come from. It was just a matter of applying a client's budget towards a media purchase where you're renting attention. And I often refer to Don Draper and that whole process of paid media as being fossil fuel, because it's akin to the idea that, you know, in order to get our car to go down the road, we've got to go to the local gas station, pay for that, fill up our tank, drive off. And then when we run out of energy, you come back and you refill again. You know, we aren't the person that aggregated the gas, that distilled it, that, you know, pumped the oil out of the ground and actually, you know, manufactured it. We benefit from the activities of a third party. And that's very akin to the media that delivers us and rents us attention of these audiences that they built. The change that's happened because of the internet and its maturation is now that brands can build direct relationships. We know this implicitly, right? Email subscribers, YouTube subscribers, SMS subscribers, Facebook fans, Twitter followers, Instagram followers, Pinterest followers, et cetera, et cetera.
A third of your book is about all the different places you can build audiences now.
Exactly. There are so many of them. But what the hole that I discovered in marketing is nobody is singularly responsible for audience development within brands. Instead, it is kind of distributed across different channels, and therefore it gets de-emphasized. And so, and I find this very true when I talk with content marketing audiences, they put 99% of their effort in content creation and then 1% in terms of audience development. And really, I think those should be more even, because Joe Polizzi will even tell you the reason he does content marketing is to gain an audience. And so if you don't gain and retain, if you don't have a means to engage them over time, you're reinventing the wheel. Every time you go out with a new piece of content, you're going to have to gain that audience again. What I'm suggesting is we need to have a person or a team or at least a focus within our marketing departments so that we're increasing the three aspects of audience growth over time, and that is size, engagement, and value. Instead of, you know, oh, we launched this great white paper or this wonderful video, and now we've got another one and we've got to go do it over again without the benefit of a springboard audience from the prior release.
Mm-hmm. You also talk about, back to content marketing, how proprietary audience development is the other side of the content marketing coin. Can you explain more about that?
Well, it goes in line with what I was just saying, right? Again, I've been blessed to work with some really great folks in the industry, from Joe Polizzi to Ann Handley over at Marketing Pros to Danny Sullivan and Chris Sherman of the SMX shows and Search Marketing Land and Marketing Land. You talk to any of them, their number one goal with content they put in the marketplace is to gain a bigger audience for the next piece of content. It's to gain that direct relationship, usually email being the first channel, because they can control the send, the cadence, the content, and they can track it so that with each respective new piece of content, they've got a bigger, better, more responsive, more valuable audience the next time around. So that's why I say that proprietary audience development and content marketing are just different sides of the same coin. They feed each other, right? The content is the lure, you know, the audience is the fish. And you need to invest time and effort into thinking about, okay, we attracted the audience with this piece of content. How are we going to continue to keep them engaged and continue to derive value and give, you know, have a mutually beneficial relationship here? Too often, I think marketers think in campaign mentality, and the campaign mentality has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then cake to celebrate the results. What we're moving to is an always-on marketing mentality, where yes, you can have campaigns to boost, you know, response in a short period of time, but the truth of the matter is you're always going to have content out there, you're always going to have your mobile app, you're always going to have your website, and you're always going to need to be building audience, because there's constant churn in any audience. You quoted, you know, earlier in our conversation today, no audience is owned. The audience can leave at any time, and especially in marketing, it is an opt-in world. The permission is from the consumer, and they can click and unsubscribe, unfollow, unlike, you know, what have you. So having that individual or that brand mentality that we're going to put as much energy into thinking, how do we grow and retain the audience as much as we do? How do we create great content to attract them? That creates this, you know, this beneficial life cycle for the brand, so that what they're doing is building direct audiences through channels that have meaningful value to them that they can track, and reducing their dependency on paid media, which then gives them greater marketing flexibility, because now they can go direct to the consumer to launch products and then supplement with much better targeted, hopefully, you know, smarter buys in the paid media end of things. And that's where I think the competitive differentiation comes from. The companies that do that now aren't going to be having to do, you know, large, you know, kind of hit or miss ad buys. They're going to have more audience kind of in their back pocket that they can tap. And again, that is going to create a competitive advantage that, you know, really hits the bottom line.
In the book, you talk about, you know, again, proprietary audience development, and it's very important for large companies, but probably even more important for smaller companies who have a limited marketing budget. Mm-hmm. And it may seem like a subtle difference, but it's very important. If you could give the example of actually a larger advertiser's, Papa John's in the Super Bowl, that's a great example of how they were, yes, they might have been advertising or promoting their brand, but at the heart of it, they had their eye on developing more of an audience. Can you tell that story?
Yeah. So interesting, because there's a new punctuation on that story. So 3 years ago, now Papa John's, actually, I think it was 4 years ago, Papa John's sponsored the coin toss. And the coin toss in the Super Bowl is the most watched coin toss in North America for any sporting event. It hadn't been sponsored up until that point. And that sponsorship, you know, didn't cost them the $4 million or $4.5 million that an ad would if they ran it during the Super Bowl. So they bought, you know, some inventory that hadn't been even sold before and at a lower cost. And then they used their owned media, their pizza boxes, their own advertising, their in-store placards and things to drive consumer awareness. And then they bought also lower cost local ad inventory to get people to register for their Papa Rewards program prior to the Super Bowl. And the incentive was, when you register, you're going to be able to bet heads or tails. And if you win, you're going to get a free pizza, and the code will be sent to you via email after the Super Bowl. So instead of selling pizzas for one game, which is what the other advertisers did, they built a proprietary database of email subscribers, members of their Papa Rewards program, to whom they could sell pizzas for the whole year and beyond. Now, they did that campaign for 2 years running in the Super Bowl. Then they morphed it into a regular campaign throughout the NFL season with a special emphasis on Sunday night games. And then this year they did something interesting, and that was they were going to give away free pizzas again for people who had a purchase of $15 or more in the Thursday to Sunday of Super Bowl weekend. So they didn't buy the ad. They didn't sponsor the Super Bowl. Instead, they were sponsoring throughout the season. And again, constantly driving people into their Papa Rewards program, obviating the need for a big Super Bowl push because they'd already built the database. And that is really a prime example of what I think marketers should be today. They should be hybrid marketers. I'm not saying you don't go with paid media. I think every marketer is going to have smart reasons to be buying advertising and placing advertising with, you know, good publications, good networks that reach their target audience. What I'm saying is that paid media should be doing more than just trying to sell, as in Papa John's case, for one game. It should be trying to build engagement, or better yet, an audience for you, a direct audience, through that commercial. And it has amazed me. I analyze and I blog about the Super Bowl every year and the advertisements. This was the third or fourth year running I did it. And you would think that in this age of social and mobile, an age when 61% of viewers of the Super Bowl were going to have a mobile device, a smartphone in hand, and another 25, 26% were going to have a tablet, and the majority were willing to respond if asked to do something by advertisers, you would think that the Super Bowl ads would have had more calls to action in the moment this year, and more would have tried to build an audience with whom they could communicate after the Super Bowl. And yet this year it was almost a complete goose egg, a complete shutout for any engagement of that nature. In fact, the number one call to action for Super Bowl ads this year was no call to action at all. So as you know, kind of self-evident as a lot of the concepts in my book are, we still see brands not doing and not demanding more from their paid advertising to get them not just the sale, but, you know, the subsequent audience, so that, again, they can reduce their dependency on paid media over time.
Inertia must be the strongest force in the marketing universe. I think that perhaps if you've got a few extra books, you could just send a copy of your book to the CEOs of all the advertisers on the Super Bowl and just say, yeah, you probably haven't had a chance to look at this, but then of course that would upset the marketing folks. But
well, it's a slow drumbeat. I mean, I'm cognizant, having been in an agency, having been in-house in a marketing team, that there's a huge human element to this. Our organizations are structured for traditional media, and we've been trying to jerry-rig them to handle, you know, social and mobile and all of these new channels. I think it's going to take some risk on the part of some marketers to challenge the status quo of both the organizational structure and the responsibility sets to fully take advantage of this. But, you know, you do see some folks, you know, kind of breaking through. What they thought was a campaign all of a sudden becomes that aha moment that lets them realize, oh man, we really, you know, can derive a lot of benefit here by building a direct audience. And those success stories, as slowly but surely they come out, are the things that are going to change the hearts and minds of those larger brands.
And I have to remind myself that it took a while for people to understand and believe that the Earth rotated around the sun.
Yes.
So just, you know, sometimes when we get impatient as marketers trying to help folks understand the new world. There you go. Well, in the book, you talk about three key points, and I wanted to try and wrap up with that. In terms of building proprietary audience, you talk about seekers, amplifiers, and joiners.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you could briefly explain what the difference is between the three, because it's a great wireframe for trying to understand where all these different people fit into your larger audience development efforts.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And that's actually been great feedback that I've gotten from folks who have read the book. I was trying to just create something that was extraordinarily simple so that you had some language to wrap around your different audiences. To date, we've been talking about them mostly by channel, like, you know, our search engine or Facebook or what have you. But the fact of the matter is that consumers have different expectations and different reasons for becoming a part of your audience. So, you know, I break it down into the seekers, the amplifiers, and the joiners. The seekers are people who are looking for information or entertainment, and that is an immediate need. And once it's satisfied, they're gone. You know them as a searcher on Google or Bing. You know them as a viewer on television or YouTube. You know them as a listener on radio or podcasts. These are folks, again, they're dipping into the market to find something. And our opportunity as marketers is to try and convert that momentary attention into one of the more permanent direct audiences that we can reach that person. So if you think about traditional search engine marketing, right, it's trying to convert that person to the sale. Now, if I approach that from an audience development standpoint, that's great. I want the sale. That's job number one. But if I don't get the sale, or in addition to the sale, I also would love it if they opt in. And we'll talk about that momentarily, right? Because I want a direct means of communication. I don't want to have to keep relying on the chance and the spontaneous interest of a consumer to drive traffic to my website. I need more direct audience.
You talk about Brooks Brothers as a quick example, what they do with their search engine marketing.
Yeah, well, Brooks Brothers, I don't know if they're still doing it, but Google has these ad extensions which allow you to do more with your paid search ads, so that instead of just having a click, you can also embed an email opt-in form. And folks might be more familiar with that when you run like a travel search. You know, some of the travel advertisers might embed a search form there. They might embed, you know, clicks to, you know, save on discounts and other things right in the search ad. So that's an example of, you know, getting more from your paid media, testing those things out. Instead of just trying to get the click, why not try to get the click and the subscription? So that's the seeker population. Now, if you look at the amplifier population, these are folks who are audiences with audiences. And 20, 25 years ago, the only people who had audiences who were in our audience were usually professionals. They were the media, they were analysts, they were people who, you know, we professionally related with public relations. But now everybody is an audience with an audience. It's changed the complete dynamic of the communication structure so that every message I send has the potential to be amplified by the recipient to their own audiences. I don't have control over it, right? My brand belongs to the masses. My message belongs to the consumers. And the thing motivating me, these amplifiers are essentially the desire to get kind of exclusive information and be of value. And this could be serving egotistical purposes. It could be serving altruistic purposes, but be of value to their own audience. And so, you know, when you put out something in the marketplace to appeal to influencers, you kind of want to chew the food a little bit. You want to make it easy for them to consume and retweet or share with their own audiences. But you also want to be conscious that that amplification, too, is momentary. You know, what is the lifespan of a tweet? What is the lifespan of a Facebook post? Right. And again, you want to be thinking in terms of moving that audience that you reach through the amplification into a customer relationship, a sale, or the third group, which are joiners. And the joiners, the ultimate joiner is a customer. They join with their credit card. But short of that, or in addition to it, I want a subscriber, a fan, or a follower. And as time has moved on, we begin to understand and the renewed importance of email. And most, you know, kind of smart marketers that I talk to, the email subscriber is the number one place they often want to start, because again, that is something where they can control the cadence through marketing systems that they can customize and personalize and do predictive things with the content as they begin to understand the consumer better. So it's a channel really that you own the communication, but you don't own the audience. So you're constantly earning their attention. It's permission-based. They can opt out at any time. The fan environment is one where, you know, Facebook is kind of co-opted the fan concept, but that has changed over time, both by distribution and how they allow you to interact with that fan directly. But if you think about a fan can be expressed in many different ways. And I use a lot of rock and roll, you know, kind of concert metaphors and quotes in the book, you know, to get people thinking about, well, what is an audience to, you know, Bruce Springsteen or another band? And you'll discover, and I quote Bruce Springsteen in the book, that he understands, look, I constantly got to be earning that fan's attention and their interest. There's a lot of stuff competing today. I have to be serving them. There's this servant mentality that you have with the subscribers, fans, and followers. So the joiners become that direct audience with either email or SMS, where I can push the send button, with, you know, Facebook and Twitter and others, where, yeah, I can put things into the feed, but I need my own amplification structure to make sure it's seen. And then other channels that people don't often think about, like one of the big ones, I think, for especially, you know, larger brands or visual brands, people who have something to say visually, is YouTube. YouTube gives you the ability to build subscribers right there, and they actually don't charge you to send out messaging to those subscribers. YouTube does it on its own. So, you know, your subscribers are getting notified when you push new videos out there. So there are a lot of different channels. The key is to think like your customer, like your consumer, be customer-centric, and look at what channels they inhabit, and then build your audiences and prioritize them out from there. You don't have to have an audience development plan for every channel. The key is to have an audience development plan and strategy, and then execute it across the channels that are most meaningful to your consumers. And when you do that, you should see some very, very positive results over time, where, again, you now can be a more critical consumer of paid media, using it to target folks who are outside of your current audience set, or even using it to reinforce messaging. And that's one of the exciting things that's happening with the rise of social advertising. If you are really going to get the maximum value out of social advertising, let's say on Facebook, you now need to be building proprietary audiences, not just of fans, but one of the great things you can do is match that to your email subscribers and now do targeted ads based on, is this person an email subscriber and a fan? If so, I may want to reinforce a message I just sent out via email. We have a retail client that we just saw got a 22% lift by doing that, by having the email message go out and then be reinforced by social advertising and Facebook. And then similarly, you can look at lookalike groups. So these people aren't my subscribers or my fans, but they have the same demographic and psychographic makeup. So I want to do some tested, targeted advertising to them that's going to get them to be exposed to my brand and then hopefully either purchase or become a part of my audience. So this is where it gets really exciting, because the lines are blurring and you can use your direct proprietary audiences to increase the efficiency and the response of your paid media in social advertising. It's kind of crazy.
It is, but so is marketing these days. A lot to keep up with. But I think if people just start thinking about building an audience, it can start to transform a lot of the decisions they make. If they just think of it differently, instead of, you know, throwing all the spaghetti against the wall.
Totally agree. And that, and that's an important point. I'm glad you said that, because often what I'm asking or suggesting that folks do doesn't add a lot of sweat equity or, you know, even real cost into your paid media or your marketing strategy. It's just that slightly left of center perspective that says this is a great ad, but are we asking people to engage with us? Are we building an audience? Are, you know, could we be doing more of that? And so, you know, in the book, I kind of predict the rise of audience development folks within our marketing departments. The giant metaphor around content marketing is that we're all now media companies thanks to instantaneous worldwide distribution of whatever content we put on the web.
Mm-hmm. Think like a publisher.
Exactly. But if you look at publishers, if you look at media companies, they don't just have an editorial side, a content side of the house. They have an audience development side of the house. And that's why, you know, when Jimmy Fallon launched, you know, his version of The Tonight Show, if folks can remember, you were inundated with ads, with local interviews, with print. You know, he was everywhere. That's because NBC's audience development team was buying paid ads to drive attention and, you know, hopefully viewership of that show. They were in charge of that. Over here was Jimmy's team in charge of the content, but there was an entire audience development team focused on it. And so I think, you know, again, that I too believe that now we're all media companies. But if I'm going to buy into that, I also have to believe that we've got to be more focused on audience development.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's wrap up with just one of my favorite lines from your book, and then we'll go into a couple closing questions. And because of all this change in marketing and the requirement to keep learning, you say, the only way to remain relevant as a marketer is to never stop learning. As you progress, however, do more than just focus on what's new. Focus on what delivers results and what is lasting. So are there any marketing books that you've read that you might recommend?
Yeah, so we just had a guest on Social Pros with Jay Baer by the name of Rory Vaden, who wrote a book called Procrastinate on Purpose. And it ties beautifully to that quote, because the whole thesis of the book is that we've got to understand the things that we have to stop doing as much as the things we should be doing. And, you know, the subtitle is Five Permissions to Multiply Your Time. And it's really about getting into your own head and understanding that you've got to grant yourself permission to stop certain things and to start certain things or to get better at certain things. And so, you know, I read that prior to our interview and with Rory, and it really resonated and stuck with me and is something that I'm probably going to be rereading just because, you know, it highlights those things in our own subconscious that we might be doing that are actually undermining our efficacy and our ability to get things done and prioritize the things that are meaningful into our lives, like family and you know, that ability to connect with, you know, our loved ones. So again, Procrastinate on Purpose by Rory Vaden, V-A-D-E-N. Highly recommend it.
We'll make sure to include a link to that in the show notes. And that is not the first time his book has come up on this podcast.
And it seems to be resonating with folks, you know, simple ideas, well executed. I like it.
Are there any marketing books on your upcoming reading list?
You know, we just finished our kickstart at Salesforce, and we were given this one called The Second Machine Age, and I'm very interested in reading it. One of the big things that's going to be shaping marketing is going to be data science and automation. Right now, we tend to talk about marketing automation just in terms of B2B, but the truth of the matter is it's a much broader conversation about, you know, data-based intuition about consumer needs, predictive intelligence, those types of things. And so as marketers, our job is not just creative, it's also to understand and adapt to technologies. And so Second Machine Age by Andrew McAfee and Eric Brynjolfsson, I think I got the pronunciation right, is one that'll be on my next flight for reading.
Well, that sounds interesting. I have not read that one. Which marketing blogs do you enjoy following?
You know, you're catching me at a interesting time because I'm between travel, which is when I tend to consume them a little bit more. I just I subscribe to Jeremiah Owang's blog, and he's looking at, you know, connected companies and crowd companies. And I always enjoy reading his perspective. He had a great post today about looking out and how the driverless car world is going to dramatically impact many, many, many industries. And I like reading those types of posts because they get thinking about the future in ways that, you know, certainly not everybody is thinking. But, you think about Google's driverless car project, the fact that Uber and Tesla and Apple are all playing in that space. And then you begin to think about, boy, what does that do to car dealers? What does that do to parking lots? What does that do to insurance companies? And you begin to understand that our role as marketers is as much to market our current products as it is to help our companies constantly be thinking about how to innovate and embrace change, because the pace of change is not going to slow soon. And many of us will have to be dealing with some crazy, crazy curveballs that you couldn't have predicted, 20 years ago. And yet the technology is there now and we've got to deal with it.
Yeah, it really gets you thinking about just the total disruption, further disruption of entire industries. Just a few that you mentioned right there. Jeff, how can listeners find out more about you and your book?
Sure. So folks can go to audiencepro.com. That's got all the information about the book. It's available on Amazon. Again, it's Audience Marketing in the Age of Subscribers, Fans, and Followers. And follow me at JKROHRS on the Twitter.
Jeff, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate it. And look forward to tuning in the future and hearing some of the insights of your other guests.
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. Links to everything mentioned are in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And while you're there, you can subscribe to the podcast newsletter to get notified of every new episode, its show notes, links, and other useful things. Also, at marketingbookpodcast.com, there are about 20 free marketing ebooks on a wide variety of topics that lots of people have found helpful. If you're one of the people who have left an iTunes or Stitcher review, I really appreciate it, and it has more impact than you might realize. A one-sentence review shoots the podcast way up in the listings. Finally, I get such a kick out of hearing from my listeners. It really makes my day. To send a message, just go to marketingbookpodcast.com and click on the Contact Podcast button. Got an idea or suggestion? Maybe I'm doing something wrong? Let me know. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast. Till next time.
But the idea with the book was always to kind of seed the cloud a little bit. And thus far, as more people get, kind of aware of the book, they're sharing it. And so I just came off some presentations at yellowpages.com and Cirque du Soleil and Best Buy, and was getting really positive feedback from those teams who had read it. So I think it'll take some time, and I think it's got to get in the right ears. And it was always written to be something that, for marketers, but for them to give to their C-suite so they can understand that, audiences are assets and that they are building assets. They're not just a cost center.